Where are you? Are you in bed? Or are you leaving the first human footprint on Mars? Are you jogging? Or are you about to pull off the heist of the century? Are you in your car? Or are you praying those red eyes in the darkness can't see you? A voice in your ear can take you anywhere.
Audible. Get your first audiobook for free and feel every word. $7.99 a month after 30-day trial. Starts automatically. Terms apply.
Simply the best.
Every time he sees me, his eyes light up. I can almost hear his heart beat faster. He looks at me the same way he did when we first met. For him, it's love at first sight every day. For me, it's heartbreaking.
Loving someone who's living with dementia is not easy. For support, advice, or to make a donation, visit dementiasa.org.
You're listening to Vuka Online.
You are rocking with the best.
Hope Makers Show, bringing hope to the world, one conversation at a time.
I love it. What a beautiful topic. So, and what we need right now as well.
Yes, yes. Welcome to the show. We are on.
We're on. Okay.
Welcome to the show. I think the purpose of the Hope Makers Show, I don't even know. But I know what the intention is, the underlying intention. We want to bring hope to the world somehow. And what has been inspiring, speaking to people like you, has, and then having to share them with thousands of listeners. But we're trying to move them to about 1 million people that essentially can get hope, that will have done something for the world. So welcome.
Thank you.
On the line, not on the line, on Zoom, because we are on Zoom these days. We are not doing any of that on the line stuff. And you'll tell me if I pronounce your name correctly, Christina. Gerotikis.
Gerotikis. Yep, very Gerotikis. Good.
Ah, there you go. What I usually do, the first question I always ask the people, and I'll read your bio just now, but what do you want people to know about Christina, dust off the bed?
Oh, what do I want? I've never been asked that before. That's a very interesting question. I would love people to know that I'm an innovation tragic, that I love helping people, yeah. Particularly innovators, startups, but also particularly organizations to change mindset. I so believe in a positive mindset, and the power of that positive mindset. And that's my absolute driver, to let people know that with a positive mindset and a fantastic idea, they can accomplish anything. And that's what allows me to work, relentlessly, ridiculous hours some days, but gives me great joy on a day-to-day basis and a huge sense of fulfillment.
Yes. And how is that going though? Because you are on one of the best platforms for that to happen with the Singularity University.
Yeah. So we're very much of an abundant mindset. And it's, even many people, Jim Rohn, Tony Robbins, they all say that you're the sum of the people that you hang around with. Right. And I think the amazingness of communities like yours and communities like Singularity University is that you hang with people who have an abundance mindset, who don't take no for an answer, who kind of go, there's no such thing as failure. It's all a learning. And how do we get there together? There's this great sense that many minds are better than one. And that gives me hope for the planet, and it gives me hope for that we are able to face a lot of the challenges that we face on a daily basis, and particularly on a global basis at the moment.
Yeah, and we'll come back and talk a little bit about that, because there's a number of stuff that you mentioned today that I want to hook up to, but we need to take a quick break. We are with Christina Gerotikis, who is the co-CEO of Singularity University in Australia, a catalyst for change. I like this word, by the way. This is my favorite word, and I see it in your profile. Alchemizing impossible to possible through unleashing human potential. And we'll continue to share what are some of the exciting things that she is busy with. But I think, as you know, this show is really talking about hope on the Hope Makers Show. So let's take a quick break, get a drink, take a bit of a walk, get a little bit of a sunshine. There isn't much today, but and we'll be back after this.
The Africa Center for Work-Based Learning is a professional development center for professionals who aim to improve their professional standing. This means that the learning programs we run are more than just academic programs. They are work-based programs that focus on leveraging your current experience as a professional to build your overall profile. A year down the line, the Africa Center for Work-Based Learning is developing into a preferred center for professional development in Pretoria, with 8 professional development faculties including accounting, teaching, entrepreneurship, as well as IT and many more. For more information, go to acwbl.org or dial +27 12 751 7608. The Africa Center for Work-Based Learning, where work is learning.
Broadcasting worldwide online 24/7.
It's Vuga Online, your inspiration radio station.
Yay, my people, welcome back to the Hope Makers Show. And you are with Mongazi, and we are chilling to hope. Oh, I like that. We are chilling to hope, and we're trying to make a hope trend. So hashtag Hope Makers, hashtag hope. You can also follow me at Vuga Online Radio, or otherwise at Mongazi Sima Kalima. If I matter at all, you can also follow me at Mongazi Sima Kalima. And most importantly, follow the Hope Makers Collective. That's where we are having a lot of this conversation with some of these fantastic people across the world, including my guest here, Krishna Georgekis. Krishna, you started this conversation talking about abundance mindset and talking about possibility. And what I remember, probably about 15 years or so ago, this was a woo-woo type of conversation in organizations, in the world. I'm going to use this phrase, you people. You people were the hopefuls of the world, and this thing doesn't work. Real world requires guts and balls and all of that other stuff. What changed?
What changed? I think more and more people jumped on board and realized the truth. So, you know, it's like Newton said, everything has an equal and opposite reaction. Yeah. So if you believe in fear and if you believe in despair and all of that, then there has to be an equal and opposite reaction, even though I don't like the fear component and the despair, etc. But if you look at it scientifically, that happens. I think there's been more and more studies done as well on what a positive mindset does, the effect it has on your body, the chemicals that are released when you're happy as opposed to when you're sad or angry, when you're hopeful, when you're living in a positive mindset and abundant space, the chemicals that are released from your body. We've been able to study that. We've been able to use technology in great ways to measure what that means for us. So I think that's changed. And I also think that, you know, it's like Peter Diamandis, from one of the co-founders of SU, says that the day before an idea is a great idea, it's a crazy idea. So potentially quite a few years ago, somebody went, hey, this is possible. And everyone went, well, it's woo-woo and it's not great and it's, you know, it's this, that, and all the things that you just mentioned. And now we've almost got to tipping point, or we have got to tipping point, where people have got on board with the concept of love and hope and courage and optimism. And there's more and more studies being done on the positive benefits of what that is.
Yeah.
I think a lot of things have happened.
Yeah. A quick challenge, though. I mean, we're living now in a world where this, it's quite crazy how how many wars there are right now, when we are supposed to be really sane and loving and abundant. So somebody could be sitting there and going, yeah, but is it working though, when you still have people in poverty and lots of war taking place?
Yeah, and that's a very valid comment. Peter Diamandis actually, again, breaks that down and says, you know, there's less children dying from disease, there's less poverty, there are actually less wars. I think media has allowed us to know about many things that before we didn't know about, but the stats, there's less people being killed in wars. And I also believe that we are at a tipping point as a species. Yeah. And it's up to us which way we tip the scales. So we can go, you know, we're full of hatred and war is the only thing that we can do, and forget about loving thy neighbor and treating other people the way that you would like to be treated. We can go that way, or we can face the opposite direction and lift everybody. And I very much believe that if we give people the resources, if we give them education, if we feed the population, and technology is making a lot of that very viable now, you know, where we can 3D print food, we can grow food in isolated locations, we can grow grasses and lettuces and other kinds of food products in vertical farming. I think we have the ability now to expand that and to be able to eventually feed everyone on the planet. And I do believe that if we look after the planet, she will look after us back as well. But I do believe that everything you said is true. It's we humans are causing one way or the other way. So the question to the listeners is, which way do you want to tip the seesaw?
I'm actually hearing you say we actually have an option now. It's no longer this thing that where you are forced into this machine and where essentially you have to comply and follow. There are options. You can, because I remember I was saying to one of the guests on the show, I was saying a few years ago when I spoke about teaching love as a leadership concept, people were going like, what do you mean? We're not interested in love. We want to make sure that people pay consequences.
Yeah, and that was very true. I think there is a big shift in mindset. You know, there's the move around, you need to have a social impact.
Yeah.
You need to have that social bottom line as well. You need to want to have a positive impact on the world. If you're a big organization, that needs to be very much primary up in your mindset, in your manifestos. Can you hear the dogs barking? There's somebody.
I can hear an additional guest. It's probably a good indicator for us to take a quick break anyway, because we need to take music. And then when we come back, I want us to talk a little bit. You're based in Australia.
Yes.
Currently, I'm curious about what is it that's going on there that gives this indication around a shift in hope. I mean, I was looking so far, and a little bit of being on the radio kind of helps because I kind of pay attention to Australia. But most of the time, people don't talk about countries unless there's drama. So I'm curious to hear, what are some of the exciting things that are happening there that can bring hope to the world? But most particularly will go into Singularity University and the work that you guys are doing. And what are some of the exciting innovations that you're seeing showing up in some of the work that you do? But for now, we need to take a quick break and a musical break, because we are more music, more inspiration on Vuga Online. We'll be back.
I'm going to shut the door.
Don't take credit. Unexpected coming from a bank. But just think about it. Using credit to finance a flashy lifestyle to show that you've arrived won't help you live better. What's new today is old tomorrow, except for the debt that you still have to pay. But do take credit to renovate your home, buy a more reliable car, or pay for your children's education. If that's your goal, then Capitec will help you realize your dreams. Because living better starts when you get credit for the right reasons.
More music, more inspiration. Vula Online.
Welcome back to the Hope Makers Show, and you're with Mongazi as we are chilling to hope. As Greg would say, Wednesday is Hope Day. So today is Hope Day. And on Hope Day, we are speaking to Christina Kratikas. And she is the co-CEO of Singularity University. And you do a lot of work with design thinking. At least as part of it. What are some of the exciting things that are showing up in your work every day?
I think one of the things I'm most excited about is the fact that multinational organizations, big organizations, are open to these conversations. Mm. And, you know, as we just discussed through the dogs barking, if an organization doesn't have an underlying purpose, if they're not out to have social impact, then they will find themselves on the shortlist of a lot of buyers. Even the Davos Manifesto, I think it was 2019, swapped over from having the emphasis on the people that were to make money to the people in general within the organization. You know, I think Branson helped a lot when he was with his philosophy of, if you look after your people, they will look after your customers. If you've got happy customers, you have a viable business. So I think the reflection back on people in particular, I think COVID has accelerated a lot of that in my country. COVID has accelerated, well, we really do need to listen to what people need. Mental health has been such a big issue. And through all the tragedy of COVID and what it has led, you know, multiple deaths around the world, it has also brought out collaboration. So never before have we collaborated at a global level to come up with resolutions to what this pandemic might mean, to share information. I know South Africa, for example, shared multiple pages, streams of information that helped the rest of the world progress to possible vaccines and what might make all of us better or give us the information and the tools that we needed. Yeah. So I think that collaboration, the fact that technology has united us in ways, you know, can you imagine being in isolation before tech? Now we were Zooming. I mean, I was talking to my overseas relatives more than I've ever spoken to them before, you know, and my friends overseas. So that was quite telling. But even the you know, I was watching online people playing music from their balconies in Italy and everybody joining in, just that sense of, well, we are in this together and this is our planet and we need to look after each other. We've just had dreadful floods in Australia as well, and we've had, you know, we've had several deaths from the floods and we've had whole communities that have gone underwater. You know, that's on the back of the fires that we had a few years ago just before COVID. Mm-hmm. And you would never wish that on anybody. Yeah. But to see the community come together and to help each other and to work together and to have people flock to some of those communities from unaffected places in my country and to help with a cleanup, you know, has been very heartwarming as well. So as much of the despair that's around the world, there's also lots of pockets where we've been able to shine and go, hey, we are one planet, we are one humanity, we are one species, and we really need to help each other. So I think those pockets of wonderfulness have very much supported people on the way through. The conversations that the multinationals and the corporates are having are quite remarkable. And as you said before, wouldn't have happened, you know, years before. But I also think with technology, there's not really many problems that we can't solve long term. They do take a while to get there. They do need funding. They need encouragement. They need diverse brains coming together. But, you know, there's projects, for example, where people are creating water out of thin air, basically, in India, so that there's more and more people that aren't, you know, I mean, if you have clean water, then you have better health. If you have better health, you have people going to work because they're not sick and staying home from work. If you have better water, better health, there's better education prospects for children. You know, people working on the internet. I think one of the first things that happened in one of the flood affected areas here was the internet went out, and Starlink sent all these satellites and got everybody connected within days, which was quite a remarkable feat as well. So all these things that you don't hear about, but that happen in the spirit of human kindness. And I think that's what gives me hope and what keeps hope alive for me.
Yeah. You know, I'm hearing you use the word, I had a conference a few weeks ago, and I was kind of berated to kind of watch my words. Subcontinuously, also just away, but you use the words pockets of human kindness. From what you're describing and what I'm noticing, and I think this show is kind of also creating a bit more awareness. It seems there's actually more of that happening than pockets. I mean, we've had floods here quite recently, and it was amazing just watching how everybody just came together. There is no that sense of helplessness, because before, what would be happening is those people, and you know, that we then sit in our own little corners and do our own little thing. So it sounds like it's not pockets. It sounds like there's a movement here.
I think you're right. It is a movement, but there are also very deep pockets and very big pockets. So I think it's the perception of pockets. And, you know, I'm going to choose my words much more carefully now that you've mentioned that. I think movement is a great word. You know, there's global movements around how do we help people? How do we band together? So, you know, thank you. I think that's a great word. There's a movement of kindness. And when you have kindness, there's a movement for love. There are more and more people choosing where to spend their money. And they're doing that through purpose. So I think all those things together, it's almost like we're snowballing to tip that seesaw in the right direction.
Let's tip it. I think we are ready. I mean, this whole old mindset, it's quite fascinating. It shocked many people, although it didn't really shock me too much, when the war in Ukraine, for example, started happening. And I was like, well, there's got to be at least somebody that's testing our resolve to move and shift. But like you, I think I've been watching this shift. But I want to shift the conversation. Speaking of shift, I want to shift the conversation a little bit. Do you get hopeless? Do you ever get hopeless at all?
Of course I get hopeless, and I feel that despair. And, you know, I was very blessed a few years ago to hear the Dalai Lama speak. And somebody said to the Dalai Lama, how do you live in a constant state of happiness? And he said, you shouldn't aim for a constant state of happiness, because if you live in a constant state of happiness, it actually doesn't feel like happiness. If you live in a constant state of hope, it doesn't feel like hope. He said, we should all be aiming for contentment, because at contentment, it means that we can deal with the happiness, we can deal with the sadness when it comes. Let's face it, things will make us sad throughout our lives. When we can deal from a point of contentment, we can look at hope in a different way, and we can look at despair in a different way. So if you don't understand what despair is, you can't appreciate hope. If you don't know really what fear is, you can't appreciate love. From a point of contentment, you can control your reactions to it, and you can influence how your mindset will come out of it. But it's not necessarily that. So, of course, I feel, despair. I have my father's quite ill at the moment, and I feel that sadness and I feel that despair, because there is nothing that we can do for him except to love him and make him comfortable and, you know, just love him. And so that causes me despair, that I can't do anything to fix what's wrong. But it is a natural cycle. So my state of contentment, my state of where I am in my spiritual approach, allows me to feel that despair with love. So if that, you know, I think where we feel all these emotions because we're meant to, we are emotional beings. And to not be able to feel those would make us very android, and we don't want to.
We would look quite weird. And it's quite interesting. So I just want to make sure. So when you talk then, because I've had this whole conversation before around contentment, optimism, we've kind of done some interesting work with Robert Bichos Jr. In the US about this type. So when you talk contentment, and I am just a young student that's stressed about an exam, or as in your case, maybe someone just lost a parent. What do you do to get to that contentment? How would you know you have it even?
I think it's an individual journey for everybody. I was very blessed to have some amazing teachers in my life, even at school. So from school, I had some really bad ones as well. And I don't mean bad as in I didn't learn anything from them. I learned an awful lot from them. But they're the way that they were with humanity. So when I have been a teacher, so I have I've lectured at university in entrepreneurship, and we always go through through a period where we say, "How's your resilience? What does resilient mean? You know, what does persistence mean?" And I tell the startups that I work with that it's okay for them to crawl in or be in the fetal position and cry and stamp and kick and do or whatever for 5 minutes. But if they're resilient and if they're persistent and if they have that total belief in what they do, then they get back up again and they keep going. And I think it's a big test around our growth and development, how we react. And I think it's a lifelong journey. Some people learn faster than others how to control emotions. I also believe that some of us are sent to test other people's beliefs and emotions and see, you know, I've been on this case around practicing unconditional love for the last 3 years. I can tell you that I haven't achieved perfection in that stream yet. And I go, you know, I walk around going, am I loving you unconditionally? And I go, absolutely not, because I'm judging you right now, not you. Yes. But, you know, I might be judging somebody right now. So I've set myself the goal to learn because I have this insatiable curiosity and I just want to keep learning anyway. But, you know, I set myself this North Star around dealing with everybody with unconditional love, and I break my own North Star probably on a daily basis, you know, because if I love unconditionally, I don't judge. If I love unconditionally, I'd never argue with anyone, and boy, do I have some arguments. So I think it's that learning, and it's that constant sense of development and that constant trying. You know, you try. And if you can support somebody, so when you go back to those students that are feeling that despair, if you can show them the reality of what happened to you, or if someone else in the group can share a story, there's a lot of strength in people sharing stories, sharing consideration, sharing their experience and how they got over it or didn't get over it. You know, I've worked with some amazing students who have come from really, really tough backgrounds and who end up shining because everybody else lifts them up. And it's that community. You know, no two of us are alike. We don't share the same fingerprints, DNA. We share a lot of the same DNA, which is why we are one being, you know, we are all one. But we don't share exactly the same DNA. So we're all different. We all have our unique gifts. And if you've got a group of people celebrating your unique gifts and someone else's unique gifts, that helps everybody rise. And that's how we deal with the students.
There's a rise in those emotions of positivity, and it goes now back to the pools there, because now when you have those pools in there, they start creating a whole wave or movement of sorts that goes in the group. Sounds good. You are on the Hope Makers Show, and we are talking hope and all the things hopeful. And thank you to the Westwood International for powering this show. Just check them out online. All you have to do is Google Westwood International and you'll get a lot of stuff. They're doing change management and leadership and all of the other stuff that essentially make the world a better place. But more than anything else, you are on Vogue Online Radio, and what we are trying to do all the time is to play more music, more inspiration, but at the same time, give you inspiration right at the palm of your hand. We need to take a quick break. And then when we come back, Christina, there are two things that we need to do. And I see my battery is kind of saying, hey, take care of me. So I need to take care of the battery as well. Think about what is the one challenge you want to give to the listeners that they can walk away with to do and to bring hope to themselves. And then I have like two or three other questions I just want to ask. They just come here at random. I'm never really structured with this thing. I just have a conversation and we see where we're going. But let's take a quick break. It will be a very short song, but let's actually take a song break. We never take a song at this time, but let's take a song break. We'll be back after this. Cool. I'm going to take.
How do you know the life or personal coach you are about to work with is who they say they are? How do you know if they can do the job? At the Africa Board for Coaching, Consulting and Coaching Psychology, we can tell you. So, before you share your secrets and spend your money, check with us first. Visit www.abccp.com or call us on 012-751-7608. The ABCCP, the professional body for coaches.
Broadcasting worldwide online 24/7.
It's Vuga Online, your inspiration radio station.
You are on the Hope Makers Show and you're with Mongezi. You can check me out at Mongezi Makalima everywhere or otherwise on Twitter. I don't know what I was doing at MC_MAK. You can check me out on Vuga Online Radio. On Wednesdays, I do Hope and on Fridays, I do Jazz. So you can choose which Mongezi you want. Both of them, I love. the incident with the dog was quite interesting for me because it goes back to a little bit of that conversation about COVID. One of the things I realized, and I don't know what has been your impression from a human level, but I've noticed that what COVID did, it sent a message, or it gave us an opportunity at least to realize that everybody is human and people have more sides than just work. Because before we would be worried about dogs barking in the background and children coming and tugging at our sleeves, and people had, I had a workshop that I was running in Denver from here, and then somebody's cat started running on the keyboard. What has been your impression around the impact that COVID has had, particularly on the human psyche and the human experience?
Exactly what you just said. I think we've become much more accepting of each other. We've realized, because when we're on Zoom, we're actually inviting people into our homes. Yes. Now, you know, all those of us that work from home a lot. When your particular part of the world was in lockdown, you were definitely inviting people into your home. I think we became much more cognizant of pets barking, but also of very mindful about parents needing a break to homeschool, or the difficulty, you know. And in the beginning, I don't know what it was like in your country, but here there was this expectation that work still went on, even though you were then homeschooling and you were looking after the family and you were working from home. So the cat was doing it. And I think the longer it went on, the more accepting, the more giving. As we realized that people were struggling, I think organizations just went into overdrive. Most organizations, not all, most organizations went into overdrive to help their people. And there were mental health days, and there were, you know, I know a friend of mine who's a CEO of a rather large multinational in Australia. They just went, right, everyone down tools. No one's to work for the rest of the day. So they basically had half a day off, and they just went, that's it, go do something else. We couldn't do much because we were all in lockdown. The country was in lockdown. But it was, turn all your media off. You are not to answer another email. You're not to you've got the afternoon off. And I think things like that, and I think what we've realized is that if we're in a better mental state, our productivity increases. I think a lot of organizations have actually realized that the productivity levels are what counts, not the number of hours that you might do. Clearly, there were lots of people that struggled, and there were lots of people that needed additional support. And we came to the party. We gave a lot of people that additional support. Most people, not all people, didn't get that. And not all organizations were forthcoming like that. Yeah. But, you know, I'm very blessed in the circles that I keep. that a lot of organizations did whatever they could to support people. And I know we very, you know, we would go, hey, one of our people mentioned that they were feeling a little low, we'd send them flowers or we'd send them a hamper, or, you know, everyone would jump online at the same time and sing a song or do something crazy to make each other laugh. So I think we learned how to look after each other better.
Yeah. And you guys were on a lockdown for much longer than many people. So because I think we at least had a bit of breaks in between. So it must have been particularly tough for organizations. But because you also work with startups, what are some of, maybe let's, I want to make this this question twofold. One, going back to the COVID and the impact of it, but I'm also quite interested in what are some of the trends that are evolving now with startups that you're picking up?
That technology has become much more acceptable. So in Australia, and I know it happened in other places around the world, but I can't speak for them, but in Australia, all of a sudden telehealth became acceptable, and telehealth was on this slow road to being accepted. And COVID came and we went, well, if we want to look after people, we need telehealth. So that was something that was accelerated. So medtech very much has taken off. I think edtech as well has very much taken off because we needed to educate people, whether you're an executive and you wanted to bring your team together for executive education, or whether you were teaching schools. There was this movement. All of a sudden people had to become equipped with what online learning meant. Now, whether you're an expert in online learning or not, it didn't matter. And I know, I think for me too, like we pivoted very quickly. So we, I was delivering a workshop. I did two sessions of the same workshop on a Monday. I think it was a Monday. And then I got a phone call. So the workshop's finished at 6 o'clock. At 6:30, I got a phone call to say the third group that we were doing very early the next morning, one of them was suspected of having COVID. So they were telling everyone to stay at home and could I pivot the whole presentation online? And I went, I've got about 18 hours. No, less. I had something like 14 hours to engage people online, which was okay because it was very early. So they weren't sick of online. But so I think a lot of organizations had to pivot. I think innovation absolutely took off. So there's a gin distillery not too far away from where I live that turned into a hand sanitizer producer because all of a sudden everyone wanted hand sanitizers and they weren't there. I know restaurants went into huge innovation stages. There was a gourmet restaurant that didn't want to do takeaway because that's not who they were. So what they did was they made up packs of ingredients and they created online cooking tutorials to show people how to chef these ingredients that were being shipped out to them. So that was their innovation, their pivot. So I think it allowed the creativity to come through, and innovation was given a lot more credence. I think what's happened lately, just in the last few weeks, is that people are going, whoa, it's almost like, you know, I really don't want people to forget all those lessons.
Yes,
but we're being challenged to remember. Yeah. Those lessons.
And actually, as you were outlining, I don't know if you noticed, like I kind of shifted a little bit in my, because I kind of had to go back and remember a lot of our experiences. And I'm going, oh my God, we actually literally overcame, but because I had goosebumps, like as you were going through that whole story and list, I like literally had goosebumps and got a bit of a chill, because at the same time, what was happening in media then was a different portrayal of that experience, of people complaining, of people, of fake news and conspiracy theories. And that's kind of what they were peddling. But I can see how, in fact, it just gave me an idea. So I'll be following this idea up. A movie about our experiences across the world during COVID that had nothing to do with conspiracy theories. Exactly the stuff that you just been outlining, because as you were talking about it, I'm going, oh my God, even here we had people just shifting. All of a sudden, people had masks and making the factories, and then everybody was going into collecting food and food parcels for people. It was crazy how we all just came together. We need a movie about this, guys. We need a movie to remind us.
I think what you said before, we need a movie about the movement.
Yes.
So I think that's perfect what you say.
Yes, a movie about the movement. Christina, we're almost about to wrap up. That I would be in trouble if I don't ask this question. So, because it's sitting at the back of my mind, whenever Australia is mentioned, as in Canada, as in South Africa, as in other parts of the world, the treatment of the new, of the old, the treatment of the new occupiers of the land as with the natives, it always comes up. How is that movement happening now? Because, and I'll tell you where this question is coming from. It's not, so much a political as a spiritual transformation thing that I'm hearing. I'm noticing that the things that you're mentioning now are pretty much the core of much of native knowledge and traditional beliefs.
I so agree with you. And I had this conversation not long ago. So in every workshop, every experience that we run, we have an elder that comes to speak of culture and tradition. You know, one of my favorite examples around that is people go, data collection, data collection, data collection. I go, data collection's not new. We're taking a group of people to a mapping site in a few weeks' time that was its version of data collection. There's all these Indigenous etchings and a map at a meeting site. And that's data collection and that's sharing of data. So data collection is not new. The way we share and collect data is new. But I don't think it's an accident that in each of our countries, so in Australia, it's, you know, all the Indigenous populations around the world were kind of going, oh, hang on a sec. Oh, there was a lot of wisdom in that. There was a lot of, you know, what are we doing now? We're sharing stories.
Yeah.
Who better shared stories than the Indigenous cultures? Who better respected the earth? Who killed an animal and used every, so now I'm getting goosebumps. I'm so, every single part of that animal, no waste, you know, and gave reverence and respect to that animal before it was slaughtered and eaten and, you know, all, you know, making water bags or whatever it was. The whole animal was revered and respected and killed with kindness. And I think we're learning that there were a lot of lessons to be learnt from that. And I don't think it's an accident that all the Indigenous law is rising across the whole entire globe at the moment, because I believe it's the only way we're really going to come to the balance that we really need. I find it intriguing. I can't think of the right word, but I find it intriguing that we weren't listening a long time ago. I think I'm blessed with a Greek heritage. So I came to, you know, my family came to Australia way beyond the tragedy that happened many years before. You know, I like to think that there was a lot of wisdom in the ancient Greeks as well. And I think all the ancient wisdoms are rising, and I think that's what's going to be our human saving grace. So absolute respect for all the Indigenous nations around the world.
The world is correcting itself, I feel. I mean, when you spoke about floods, at one level, I remember speaking to some young people and going like, well, we shouldn't actually be so worried about floods, because one thing I know about nature, I've learned from my grandmother, is that it actually corrects itself. So when there are lots of floods, there's a pattern. You know that afterwards comes a certain period. It's a period then of richness and growth and all of that. And then period of drought. And then comes lots of rain and floods. It's a whole cycle. And if we are paying attention, and I know that the elders were paying attention all along, it no longer worries me so much. But What I'm enjoying about where we are now in the world and regaining that knowledge and realizing that wisdom is we probably will stress so much less about talking about climate change and all of that, because we can do what is right, which is let nature breathe.
And you know what I, so if we go back to, so for us, everything, technology is a resource that we use to prove all the things that we talk about. Yeah. And if I go back to DNA, you know, to actually know that it's this much of our DNA, regardless of our heritage, where we're from, what color we are, like regardless of that, this much of our DNA is different and this much of our DNA is the same.
Yeah.
And that's where we need to operate from.
Yeah. I love that. So quickly, finish this sentence. What the world needs now is ...
Love, sweet love. It needs love. It does need love. So what the world needs now is love. And it needs kindness and compassion. And it needs the actions behind those. So it's okay. It's okay to say, I believe in love and I believe in kindness and I believe in compassion. But if we don't show love and if we don't show kindness and we don't show compassion, and whether you do that simply within your home, which is huge because that has ripple effects out to communities, or whether you do that within an organization because that has ripple effects, or whether you do that on a huge stage and affect thousands of people, you know, musicians that go out and sing about love and you know, where humans can be, and they're, you know, they might be speaking to tens of thousands of people at once. I don't care how many people you express this with or you act this with, but there needs to be actions behind it. So if you see somebody that's struggling, offer help. You know, I remember so the challenges that you set yourself every day. I remember I'm a walker. I love walking every day. And I remember having this flash and going, right, today you have to help everybody that you see that might need help. Next thing, there's a lady struggling with four bags of shopping in front of me walking down the block. So I go up to her and I go, can I help you with your shopping? And she goes, oh, thank goodness. You know, so I think if you listen to things like that.
Always there where you need it.
Yeah. Yeah. So listen and act out. Act out how you want. You know, I don't think there's a better way to put it than treat everyone the way you want to be treated.
Yeah.
You know, so help people. Yeah.
Although I fight with people about that, I always say, treat everyone the way they want to be treated.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Because sometimes we forget. Because back to our diversity story, and it's quite paradoxical, isn't it? Because, in fact, when you do that, you are then actually treating people exactly the way you want to be treated as an individual, as how you want to be treated. So it's actually quite weird. And then do you have a definition of hope? We've been throwing hope everywhere in this conversation. Do you have a working definition for yourself?
I see hope. I see hope in a lot of the startups that we work with. I see hope in the eyes of family, but I predominantly see hope in the eyes of a child. Who's excited about the most remarkable things. You know, I think one of my favorite stories around hope was I was watching a documentary, and there were these children in I think it's called a flavola in Spain.
Favela. Yeah.
Thank you. And the kids were playing soccer with a can of Coke, like a squashed can of Coke. And the absolute joy that they were showing because they were playing soccer had nothing to do with the fact that it was a squashed can of Coke. And then I look at some of the more affluent societies, and they've got the soccer gear on and they've got the latest ball, and that, you know, and all they want to do is complain or whinge, or they cry because they haven't kicked the ball or whatever. And I think that for me is hope, that we can take joy and inspiration from the most remarkable things. And I think we all need to open our eyes and see things for what they are. So that's for me is hope in the eyes of a child.
Things, eh? And the simple things. You know what I was thinking? Actually, I saw this moonshot thinking, and I was like, I'm gonna ask a little bit about it. We have a little time left, but can you talk a little bit about this moonshot thinking?
My favorite subject.
Oh, so, there you go.
So a moonshot is wanting to do something, but not knowing quite how you're going to do it yet. And people go, oh, you know how you said before, all that's all woo-woo. So people go, oh, how do you think that's going to happen? And, you know, and I just go, just remind me, how many spaceships did we put on Mars last year? How many was it? And then we have this conversation about just to get a spaceship out of our orbit requires the most remarkable physics. So the trajectory has to be this much. The velocity has to be this much. The gravitational pull has to be this much for it to go into the next stratosphere orbit, right? And then when it goes into the next one, again, the physics around the numbers around that. And I go, who thought of all that? And how did we make that happen? And it was with persistence and resilience and all those things. So for me, moonshot thinking is very much a mindset. It's how badly do you want to achieve something? You know, we've got remarkable resources now, like quantum computing that you know, I believe is actually going to be, quantum computing is going to be the intersection between the truth of science and the truth of spirituality, because what we're proving with energy and how everything vibrates and never ends, I think that's going to be quite a remarkable thing that's going to come out of quantum. But, you know, if you think about even a light switch, the microphones that we're using, the fact that we're Zooming, you know, I'm talking to you, you're in South Africa and I'm in Australia, and isn't that crazy? That we're throwing and we're talking in real time with pictures and we're having this amazing conversation. So if you think about all those things, were once an idea, you know, fire was once an idea, an aeroplane was once an idea, and now we go, oh, I can't wait to get back on an aeroplane or not. That's what a moonshot is. A moonshot is not knowing how you're going to do it, but you have a go and you're pulling people and you have conversations and you have that persistence to make it happen anyway.
Sounds inspiring. I keep thinking I actually need to listen to one of I need to attend one of your keynote on this very soon. Challenge to the listeners as we wrap up.
Okay. Be the action. So whatever it is that you want to see, if you want to see love, if you want to see hope, if you want to see kindness, if you want to see all these things, look at your children or your nieces and nephews. Everybody, you know, may not want to have children or they may not be blessed with children, but how do you want, what's the legacy that you want to leave? And the only way that you're going to leave that legacy is if you live it and breathe it. So if you want all these amazing things, if you want to be able to tell story, if you want to see your children or your nieces or your nephews or your country or whatever it is progress, you need to be actioning. You can't just be talking. Talking's great. You have the conversations because otherwise people don't know, but you need to put an action. You need to stand by what it is and you need to have a voice. So when you see something that you don't like or you don't agree with, you need to have the courage to speak up.
Yeah. I love that. It's a great way to conclude it. My grandmother uses there's a phrase here that describes exactly that as a proverb. It says, "Molomo utsela nogaitletsi." The word can cross the ocean, but you need to take action. Love it. Yeah. Love it. Love it.
Yep.
Christina Jonatikis is co-CEO of Singularity University Australia and an eternal optimist, idealist, and her mission is to inspire, transform, and empower leaders to find solutions to humanity's grand challenges. And I'm hoping you are inspired from all of this conversation to go and take a shot in the moon and see what is it that we can achieve. We always close the show with a song. What song can I play for you? Whether you love it or it's something that reminds you of something, what's your favorite song we can play?
I think one of my favorite songs is Louis Armstrong's What a Wonderful World.
Yes.
So that fits your jazz.
Does that?
Love it.
Christina, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your energy. Thank you for your contribution to the world. But most importantly, thank you for this conversation.
Thank you. And thanks for the opportunity. I think what you're doing is remarkable. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And to all of you listeners, we'll meet you again next week, God willing. And remember, in the meantime, hope is the seed of data in our heads that tells us it will be all right if we nurture it. What a wonderful world. See you soon.
If you're enjoying this interruption and find the sound of my voice captivating, you may be experiencing extreme boredom.
Try new, fast-acting Subaru Impreza in hatch or sedan, formulated with symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive. Cure boredom fast with new Impreza.